Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, August 10th, 2024. Drilling picks up for third time in 4 weeks. Drilling activity has inched higher for the third time in the last 4 weeks. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its weekly U.S. rig count added 2 rigs for 588 rigs active across onshore U.S. That's still 66 rigs, or 10% below the 654 rigs reported a year earlier. The number of rigs seeking crude oil was up 3 to 485, down 40 rigs from 525 drilling for oil the previous year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was down by 1 rig to 97, 26 fewer rigs than the 123 drilling for natural gas last August. Texas followed the national trend upward, gaining 2 rigs for 276 rigs drilling across the state. That's down 36 rigs from 312 a year ago. New Mexico lost 1 rig for 107 at work in the state. Colorado 1, Pennsylvania 1, and Wyoming 2 joined Texas as producing states seeing an increase. Louisiana 2 and Ohio 1 joined New Mexico as producing states to see a decline. The Permian likewise saw an increase, adding 1 rig to report 304 rigs across the play. That's down 23 rigs from 327 a year ago. The Marcellus and DJ Diabrara plays also saw increases. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian with 52 rigs, down 1 for the week. Right behind is Lee County, New Mexico, which continues to report 51 rigs. Martin County had 31 rigs for a 6th consecutive week, while Reeves County added 2 for 28 rigs this week. Loving County had 21 rigs, down 1 for the week. Midland County reported 18 rigs for a 5th week. Reagan County had 15 rigs for a 2nd week, and Upton County had 13 rigs for a 2nd week. Howard County had 11 rigs at work within county lines for a 2nd week. Energy Dedicated Software, as a service firm in Veris, said its U.S. rig count for the week ended August 2nd was unchanged at 621 and is down 88 rigs, or 12%, from 709 a year earlier. The company said the number of rigs drilling for crude oil jumped 5 rigs to 200, still coming in 229 rigs, or 53% below the 429 rigs seeking oil last year. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell 5 rigs to 84 and is 91 rigs, or 52% below the 175 drilling for natural gas last August. ExxonMobil continues to lead the top 10 producers by rig count with 40 rigs, up 2 for the week. ConocoPhillips was unchanged at 32 rigs, and Occidental added a rig for 26. Enverus Permian rig count for the week ended August 2nd added 3 rigs for 304 rigs at work in the region. That's 36 rigs, or 11% below the 340 counted last year. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, lost 2 rigs for 164 rigs, down 23 rigs, or 12% from 187 last year. The Midland Basin gained 3 rigs to have 118 rigs in the region, 12 rigs, or 9% below the 130 reported last year. Looking at trailing 30-day permits, the Permian had 680 permits as of the week of July 19th, down from 763 the previous week, but above the 641 reported a year ago. Enverus also reported the Permian had 117 active frac crews as of the week of July 19th, up from 105 a week earlier, but below the 144 crews active the previous year. Is third time the charm for Costco? Plans have been drawn up, and the deal is far along for Costco to finally come to Midland. Maybe the third time will be the charm. The City of Midland and Midland Development Corp. on Friday announced that Costco is coming to West Midland off of State Highway 191, according to a Facebook post from the city. This isn't, however, the first time plans were in the works to bring the popular wholesale retailer to Midland. It was reported back in 2014 that developers in Midland and Odessa were working to bring Costco to the Dorado Center, owned by ICA Properties and located off SH-191. Senior Vice President Tom Glassman told the Reporter-Telegram in 2016, quote, "We talked to several national retailers and companies, whether it be Sam's, Costco, or XYZ warehouse store. We tried to talk to everyone. Nothing was ever formalized, but somewhere in the community, someone thought we had a deal, and nothing is ever done until it's done," end quote. ICA recently snagged Bass Pro Shops for Dorado Center after the sporting goods store nixed plans to build a smaller size shop in the city of Midland, instead opting to build a full-size location in Odessa. In February 2019, Costco was listed at the developer of a 30-acre area near the intersection of SH-191 and SH-158. However, in June 2020, the wholesale club pulled back on the acquisition. City Council already had a Chapter 380 agreement that would have refunded up to $7 million of the sales tax generated from the development. This time, though, this third attempt at a deal seems close to the finish line. Site plans have been drawn up and shared with the public. The MDC and city are set to vote Monday and Tuesday, respectively, on whether to approve various incentive deals to bring Costco to Midland, including sales tax rebates and reimbursements linked to job creation. Costco is coming to Midland. The City of Midland and Midland Development Corp. have announced that Costco is coming to Midland. It will be located in West Midland off of State Highway 191, according to a Facebook post from the city. MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris told the Reporter-Telegram that a deal has been in the works for the past 4 to 5 months, but the city and MDC will provide incentives to make the deal happen. Costco has been the number one most requested amenity in Midland, according to the city. Quote, "This has been something that has been requested innumerable times to the MDC board, city council, and on social media," end quote, Harris said. Quote, "This is a response that we're supporting the community," end quote. The closest Costco currently is in Lubbock at 6020 34th Street. Developing a new site. Costco will be a major addition to development along the SH-191 corridor, and it's at least the third time in 10 years that efforts have been underway to bring the wholesale retailer to the area. Quote, "One of the hurdles for the market is land cost and the cost of building out here," end quote, Harris said. Quote, "Both of those can be prohibitive," end quote. According to the city's Facebook post, the SH-191 corridor is prime for high-quality retail, and building out the Costco will catalyze future development. According to a preliminary site plan, Costco will sit on an 18.69-acre site, 1.01 acre of which is an outparcel for future parking. It will be accessible from SH-191, a new extension of Sinclair Avenue, and a public road to the east that is yet to be built. The plan also indicates there will be 800 parking spots, not including future expansion. Construction of this 174,000-square-foot facility is slated to begin on or before June 1, 2025. Construction is expected to be complete by August 31, 2026. What's the deal? Costco isn't coming to Midland without incentives. MDC will reimburse Costco for infrastructure and site improvements related to development for an amount not to exceed $6.5 million. A third will be reimbursed when construction is complete. A third will be paid when Costco certifies that 100 new full-time equivalent jobs have been created and maintained over 1 year. And the final third will be given when Costco certifies it has maintained these jobs over 2 years. The city Midland will rebate 50% of its portion of real and personal property tax revenue for 20 years and will rebate half of the total local sales and use tax receipts generated for 30 years after it receives Costco's certificate of occupancy. MDC will vote on its portion of the incentives package on Monday, August 12th, at its board meeting. City Council will discuss and take action the following day during its first meeting for the month of August. Midland partners with Petco Love Loss to find lost pets. Ready, Aim, Shoot, a perfect picture of your pet, that is. The City of Midland Animal Services has recently announced a partnership with the nonprofit Petco Love Lost in order to help find lost and found pets. Quote, this collaboration lets us use advanced technology and a wide range of resources to reunite missing pets with their owners quickly, end quote, said Animal Services in a press release. Quote, with Petco Love Lost, residents can easily report lost or found animals online, upload photos, and get real-time updates and alerts, end quote. MAS Director Melissa Griffin Hobson said that Petco Love Lost is a subsidiary of Petco that works with animal shelters to reunite lost pets with owners. Quote, it's an online platform that allows owners to create a profile in case their pets ever get lost, end quote, Griffin Hobson said during a phone interview on Friday morning. Quote, or if you have found an animal, then you can post a photo of the animal as well, end quote. The platform automatically contacts the user if an animal is matching the description, and the technology offers a face matching service for animals. Yes, that's right. Your favorite feline or pooch can now be scanned into the system and recognized instantly. Griffin Hobson said that the technology enables pet owners to locate their pets faster and more quickly rather than waiting for a microchip to be scanned or for someone to reply to a missing pet social media post. Quote, when I first started here, I saw that people go everywhere to look for their pet, but there is not one centralized place for pet owners, end quote, she said. Quote, Petco Love Lost also integrates the app, integrates with apps such as Nextdoor and Facebook so that you can search there as well, end quote. As Chief Operating Officer for Petco Love Lost, Abby Moore oversees direct-to-consumer digital solutions that improve the lives of pets and the people who love them. In her career, she said that one of the most impactful things that Petco Love Lost can do is invest in reuniting pets with homes. Quote, the problem is that only 30% of pet owners are registered and up to date, end quote, she said while discussing the technology behind microchips. Quote, even today, there is a lot of misunderstanding as to what a microchip is and is not, end quote. Moore said that the platform behind Petco Love Lost feeds that gap between technology and pet owners. Quote, it utilizes a central pool that other platforms are using, end quote, she said. The process for Petco Love Lost is simple. All it takes is one photo to search. Quote, they can give us information and we will run the search every hour and then reach out once a pet match is found, end quote, Moore explained during a phone interview. As far as the policy for Midland Animal Services, Griffin Hobson said that only 3 calendar business days are allowed for lost animals until a pet has to be considered for outside adoption. Quote, we want to give every opportunity for an owner to reclaim their pet, end quote, she said. Quote, but often these animals come to us without any way to identify them. They are missing both their tags and even their collars, end quote. Midland Animal Services can be reached by phone at 432-685-7420 or via email at animalservices@midlandtexas.gov to report your lost pet. They ask that you provide a detailed description, including breed, color, size, and any distinguishing features. Police seek help in hit-and-run case. Midland police are asking for help identifying a person involved in an incident where a vehicle struck a building. Quote, on July 13, 2024, at approximately 2:27 a.m., a pickup was traveling eastbound in the 1500 block of West Florida Avenue, end quote, MPD said in a press statement. Quote, the pickup left the roadway and struck a building on the corner of West Florida Avenue, South Good Street, causing damage, end quote. After causing the damage, the pickup then proceeded to flee the scene of the collision and head eastbound on West Florida Avenue. Residents are asked to please call the Midland Police Department at 432-658-7108 and reference hit-and-run case number 240-713-008 with any information. Midland man arrested for laundromat robbery. A 56-year-old man was arrested for aggravated robbery after an incident at a laundromat in Southeast Midland. Midland police reported that at approximately 7:24 a.m. Thursday, August 8th, officers responded to the Wash 'em Up laundromat in the 700 block of East Florida Avenue about an aggravated robbery. Once officers arrived, they determined that a male, later identified as Ivory Eugene Merritt, had entered the business where he brandished a weapon at a 20-year female attendant and demanded she open the cash register, MPD reported. After Merritt allegedly took the cash, he fled the store in a white 2024 Mitsubishi, according to the MPD report. Quote, detectives were able to track Merritt's vehicle to the America's Best Value Inn located at 3610 Bankhead Highway, end quote, MPD stated in a press release. At approximately 2:50 p.m., officers arrested Merritt following a foot pursuit. Detectives located a quantity of cash believed to have been taken in the robbery, as well as items of clothing Merritt had worn during the robbery. MPD reported that after he was arrested, Merritt subsequently confessed to committing the robbery. Merritt was booked into the Midland County Jail. He faces charges of aggravated robbery and evading arrest, as well as violation of parole in Midland County, according to jail records. Oil prices jump 4% for the week. Crude prices broke a four-week losing streak. Three factors converged to provide price support. Positive economic data, the prospect of an interest rate cut, and fears of a widening Middle East conflict that could threaten supplies. West Texas Intermediate rose 4 or 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange. WTI continued the previous week's losing streak by dropping 58 cents Monday, but quickly regained its footing and began moving higher, including a $2.03 jump Wednesday. Prices added 65 cents Friday to close the week at $76.84, up from $73.52 at last Friday's close, and up over 4% for the week. The posted price ended the week at $73.32, according to Plains All American. Natural gas futures followed crude oil's lead, rising 4 or 5 trading days on the NYMEX and ending the week above $2 per MCF. Futures lost 2.5 cents Monday to open trading, then added 7 cents Tuesday to close over $2 per MCF and jumped 10 cents Wednesday. Prices added 1.6 cents Friday to end the week at $2.143 per MCF, up from $1.967 at last Friday's close. Volatility has returned to energy markets in recent weeks, according to John Pasey, president, Stratus Advisors. He cited several reasons for that volatility. Quote, there remains concerns about the strength of demand because of disappointing economic news, especially with respect to the recent news pertaining to China, end quote. He told the reporter Telegram by email, ticking off the list of reasons. Primary among them is continued reports of economic weakness coming out of China, which reported a decrease in manufacturing and stress in its non-manufacturing sector. Quote, while the economy has been stagnating, it does not appear that the Chinese government is planning to provide any significant economic stimulus. Instead, the government is indicating that the focus will remain on long-term goals, which includes the development of advanced technologies, end quote, he wrote. Pasey also cited concerns about demand, which he wrote were exacerbated by the weak U.S. July jobs reports. Coupled with disappointing economic news was concerns about supply. Pasey noted that the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Countries plans to maintain its current supply cuts. The group also stated its voluntary cuts of 2.2 million barrels a day are scheduled to be phased out starting this October. Prices did rebound this week for several reasons, he wrote. First, data pertaining to the U.S. service sector surprised to the upside with an increase in new manufacturing orders and the first increase in employment since February. Second, U.S. crude inventories have decreased for the last 6 consecutive weeks and are now below the 5-year average. Third, he noted the geopolitical situation in the Middle East has become precarious, with rising concerns about a widening conflict. Turning to natural gas, Pasey noted prices at Henry Hub have fallen since June 6th. Weighed down by inventories unused by a warm winter and a significant falloff in exports in previous months. Also weighing on prices was a 4.5% fall in domestic demand in March and April compared to 2023. Quote, natural gas prices have rebounded this week, in part because the monthly data released by EIA on July 31st shows a significant increase in U.S. demand for natural gas in May. The spike in demand was especially noticeable in the power sector, which increased by nearly 18% from the previous month and 4.43% higher than last year, end quote, he wrote. Midland to host watch party for Hopple's 800-meter final. Bryce Hopple has qualified for his first 800-meter Olympic final. The Midland High graduate and reigning U.S. 800-meter champion will compete at 12:05 p.m. Saturday, August 10th, aiming to become the first Midlander to medal in track and field. The City of Midland and Midland Rockhounds invite all Hopple supporters to pack the Diamond Club at Momentum Bank Ballpark for an official watch party for Hopple. The watch party is scheduled for 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Guests can enjoy free hot dogs and chips from the Midland Rockhounds, complimentary water from the City of Midland, and free snow cones from Kona Ice. The last American to medal in the men's 800 was Clayton Murphy when he earned bronze at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. The last American to win gold in the men's 800 was Dave Waddell at the 1972 Munich Olympics. Currently, Hopple is the number 4 ranked 800-meter runner in the world. Oil Report. Archrock to acquire Midland firm. Two natural gas compression companies are combining forces in a $983 million transaction. Total Operations and Production Services, TOPS, of Midland has agreed to be acquired by Archrock, Inc. of Houston. TOPS, a portfolio company of investment funds managed by affiliates of Apollo Global Management, Inc., is a leading provider of contract gas compression services for the Permian Basin. The company specializes in lower-emission, electric-driven compression for gas lift and other applications. It's that specialization in electric-driven compression that attracted Archrock, according to Brad Childers, President and Chief Executive Officer. Quote, "We like the business TOPS built," end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. Quote, "In an area we've already invested in, TOPS does it best," end quote. TOPS brings with it approximately 580,000 horsepower of predominantly young electric motor drive compression assets, as well as a substantial and contracted backlog of new equipment. The combination will increase Archrock's Permian Basin compression capacity by 30% to approximately 2.2 million operating horsepower and increases the company's electric compression horsepower to approximately 648,000. Childers estimated over 5% of Archrock's total operating horsepower is in the Permian Basin. All of TOPS employees will be welcomed in to Archrock, he said. Childers said the impact of growing oil field electrification on the region's power grid, since the customers provide power on location through microgrids or other methods. Childers noted that the company's motto is, quote, "We power a cleaner America," end quote, and said it's a philosophy the industry needs to adopt. Quote, "To preserve our license to operate, all markets need to invest," end quote, "in sustainable operations," he said. He predicted electrification will only continue to grow as transmission capacity is built out. As for Archrock, quote, "We want to be a leading provider of compression services, and with our investment in technology, digitization, and sustainability, we plan to grow with our customers," end quote, Childers said. Produced Water Society Ready for Midland Conference. The Produced Water Society is getting ready for its big conference in Midland. Approximately 400 produced water-focused professionals will gather at the Midland Horseshoe on August 13th through 14th for the Produced Water Society's Permian Basin Conference. Steve Coffey, the Society's president, said speakers and discussions will play into the energy transition. Quote, "There's a lot of talk about the energy transition. I say energy expansion because we're really expanding on all the energy needs of the world, not just transitioning to one source," end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. That includes produced water's role in producing hydrogen and in carbon capture, he said. Another trending topic is beneficial reuse of produced water but with a focus on mineral extraction. A couple of presenters will discuss their successes and failures in extracting minerals from produced water, he said. Other topics will cover orphaned wells and desalination, according to Coffey. Quote, we plan to dig deeper into regulatory issues and see what the path forward is, end quote, he said. State Senator Kevin Sparks, John Schmitz of Select Water Solutions, and Eric Hoover, Chief Operating Officer of VTX Energy, will open the first day of the conference with keynote addresses. Robert Crane, Executive Vice President, Texas Pacific Water Resources, and Jamie McMillan with Bechtel will open the second day of the conference. The Society is approaching its 35th year, and Coffey reflected on how things have evolved during that time. Quote, we've made good strides over the past 5 years. The infrastructure growth, increased water volumes have given us the opportunity to do things differently. With high volumes, it makes sense to do centralized treatment. That can cut cost to pennies per barrel. That could be make a big difference, end quote, he said. Coffey also said he stresses that it is possible to have a better environment and a better bottom line. Quote, it's not one or the other, end quote, he said. Blackcomb Pipeline gets final investment decision. Takeaway constraints that have sent Permian Basin natural gas prices into negative territory may soon come to an end. On the heels of the announcement that the Matterhorn Express pipeline will be entering service this fall, comes word that a final investment decision has been made to build the Blackcomb Pipeline. Whitewater, MPLX, and Enbridge, through the WPC joint venture that owns the Whistler Pipeline, are partnering with an affiliate of Targa Resources to build the 2.5 billion cubic foot, 365-mile, 42-inch line from the Permian Basin to the Agua Dulce area in South Texas. The developers proceeded with the project after securing enough firm transportation agreements with shippers including Diamondback Energy, Devon Energy, Marathon Petroleum, and Targa Resources. Blackcomb will source natural gas from multiple Permian Basin connections, including gas processing facilities in the Midland Basin and the Agua Blanca pipeline in the Delaware Basin. Quote, it's an exciting opportunity, and we're pleased our joint venture with Whitewater and MPLX is already yielding growth opportunities, end quote. Michael Barnes, spokesperson for Enbridge, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, Blackcomb is the fifth proposed pipeline project out of the Permian, but the first to reach FID after Matterhorn Express Pipeline, end quote, noted Alex Gafford with East Daily Analytics. Other proposed pipelines include the Warrior from Energy Transfer, Targa's Apex and Moss Lake Stella Express, while Kinder Morgan is seeking customers for a compression expansion on its Gulf Coast Express. Gafford noted that Targa's participation in Blackcomb likely means cancellation of the Apex proposal. Blackcomb would follow the 2.5 BCF/D Matterhorn Express pipeline to meet near-term production growth with the Permian, Gafford continued, but his analysis sees challenges for the project. Quote, while the Permian is chronically constrained, our basin model shows latent gas egress capacity as production struggles to fill Blackcomb ahead of startup of the 2 billion cubic feet per day Saguaro connector in 2029. Producers would need to step up drilling more than we assume, and crude pipelines would need to be expanded to raise the ceiling for oil-driven growth in order to fill Blackcomb and later Saguaro in our Permian model, end quote, he wrote in his analysis of the project. Blackcomb is expected to enter service in the second half of 2026 and will be constructed and operated by Whitewater. The WPC joint venture will own 70% of the project, 17.5% by Targa, and 12.5% by MPLX. The WPC joint venture, which owns the Whistler Pipeline, is owned 50.6% by Whitewater, 30.4% by MPLX, and 19% by Enbridge. Trace Midstream acquires Northern Delaware assets. consolidation in the Permian Basin energy sector continues as it expands from the upstream sector to the downstream sector. Trace Midstream Partners II, a portfolio company of Quantum Capital Group, has agreed to acquire Northern Delaware Basin natural gas gathering and transportation assets from LM Energy Delaware, a portfolio company of Old Ironsides Energy. Quote, Trace decided to enter the Northern Delaware because it represents some of the best proven geology in the lower 48 and is supported by high levels of activity from best-in-class public and private operators, end quote. Josh Weber, chief executive officer, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, we believe there is ample inventory across multiple benches to support many years of development in the region, setting us up for long-term success. The LM Energy system is purpose-built for the expected activity levels and types of horizontal wells being drilled today, and we are confident there are significant opportunities to continue to develop new infrastructure projects complementary to the existing platform, end quote. Located in Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico, LM Energy's natural gas gathering and transportation system consists of high and low pressure gas pipelines with associated compression, dehydration, condensate handling, and vapor recovery capabilities. Currently, LM Energy is in the process of constructing multiple new compressor stations, new gathering pipelines, and a 20-inch diameter high-pressure transportation pipeline that will connect the existing gas gathering system to a number of gas processing facilities near Loving, New Mexico. Upon completion of these projects, the system will consist of approximately 170 miles of pipeline and 12 compressor stations, with a total design capacity of 650 million cubic feet per day. The system has over 80,000 dedicated acres and is supported by long-term fixed-fee contracts from multiple producers. In a statement announcing the agreement, Elliot Gerson, LM Energy Chief Executive Officer, said, quote, I am sincerely grateful to our customers, whose success was our tailwind over the last 5 years. It was very important for us to find a successor who would continue to focus on customer service and facilitate our customers' growth. Trace is an excellent team who we know will execute, and we are excited to watch them take this business to the next level, end quote. In connection with the transaction, Quantum Senior Advisor Jack Harper of Midland has joined the Trace Board of Directors. Prior to joining Quantum, Harper served as Executive Vice President, Lower 48, at ConocoPhillips and was a member of its executive committee. Earlier in his career, Harper served in various executive roles at Concho Resources, including as president from 2017 to 2021 until the company merged with ConocoPhillips. Northern Oil continues to grow Permian presence. Since entering the Permian Basin a few years ago, Northern Oil and Gas has quickly built up a significant footprint of non-operated assets. In late July, the company struck again, teaming up with Vital Energy for the second time to acquire the assets of Point Energy Partners, a Vortis Investments portfolio company. Adam Durlam, president of the Northern Oil, described the company's activities as being, quote, co-buyers, end quote, in acquisitions. Quote, it's more meat on the bone. It gives us more transparency from a development standpoint. Let us plan the rest of our business, end quote, he told the Reporter-Telegram by video chat. Durlam explained that Northern, through its holdings, has 10,000 wells with 100 operators, providing it with a large data set that it can analyze and share with its operating partners. Quote, we can help operators plan a development program, end quote, he said, listing components like costs, well design, and well spacing. That proved to be true last year when Northern partnered with Vital to acquire Forge Energy, Durlam noted. Quote, with Forge, we showed the world what was possible with co-buying. It evolved into a joint development, end quote, he said. Working together, he said the Forge assets outperformed expectations by 20%, while well costs were cut 13%. The Point Energy assets being acquired are primarily located in Ward County, approximately 44,000 net leasehold and mineral acres, 26.4 net producing wells, 1.6 net wells in process, and about 12.1 low break-even net undeveloped locations. Vital will serve as operator, with Northern Oil participating in development efforts. Durham has observed consolidation taking place in the upstream sector and said the dynamics are shifting, but opportunities remain, and his company remains hungry for those opportunities. Quote, there's no shortage of assets coming on the market, end quote, he said. Quote, and we can be picky in looking for assets in core areas. We don't need to make acquisitions, so there are some opportunities we've passed on. Some we've been outbid on, but we can get creative, end quote. Amid the consolidation, operators have begun updating their portfolios, and Durham said his companies has already been having conversations on potential acquisitions. One benefit of focusing on non-operated assets is the company is not beholden to one basin or one contiguous area, he said. Quote, that benefits us with optionality, end quote, he said. Community. Seven questions with Georgia Temple, interviewer of the stars. For those who have been Reporter Telegram readers for a while, probably remember Georgia Temple. For more than three decades, Temple covered entertainment and faith news in the community. An author herself, Temple has recently published a memoir that delves deep into her investigation into the lives of the adults around her adoption. Just one facet of a lifetime that also has included graduating from Lee High School, Texas Tech, and the University of Texas at Arlington, working as a private investigator, an English teacher, and business owner, and the knower of all things arts in the Permian Basin. Temple has interviewed many major celebrities in her career. She sat down with the MRT for a chat about her time as a journalist and her new book. We couldn't help but ask, what's the most famous phone number in your phone book? Oh, there are several of them, but I'm not going to say who they are. How long did you work in journalism, and what kept you in the business? I started in 1979 and worked until 2013. I joined the MRT in 1980. It was the beats that I covered kept me in the business. I covered entertainment, and I covered religion. I had people say to me that these were very different beats, but they really weren't. I was dealing with people who have a passion for what they do. We had a police reporter who used to kid around with me because I'd be on the phone for hours doing long interviews. Then one time he got the task of interviewing a musician who had showed up unexpectedly. He asked the artist one question and then talked for 2 hours. In cops reporting, interviews are generally pretty brief. I loved the entertainment beat because I could get deeper into people's passions. Who would you say is the most famous person you have ever interviewed? Before working at the MRT, when I was a student at the University of Texas at Arlington, I interviewed Danny White, who was then the backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. He was really charming, and his family was really charming. The Cowboys won the Super Bowl that year, and he said to bring him a football. I did, and he had all the players sign it. So, as an entertainment journalist, the most famous person you've ever interviewed was a quarterback? Oh, well, there was Charlton Heston, too. That was pretty big. I used to do a radio program in Midland called On My Mind with Georgia Temple while I was working at the newspaper. Charlton Heston was in Houston, and his son had a movie coming out, so he was doing interviews. We had trouble with the phone connection, but when Charlton called me back, he said, well, Georgia, I'm all yours. And I said, wow, how many women in the world would love to hear you say that? He just fell out laughing. What is your advice on interviewing celebrities? Be accurate. I'd work with publicists to set up interviews, and I'd always get a callback because I had a reputation for being accurate in my reporting. It would be different today, but I'd always get a phone number so I could call back whomever I interviewed in case I needed to clarify something. And I kept those numbers at home so you couldn't find them on my desk. Have you seen the news business change? The speed of it all. When I started, we were all on typewriters. I'm glad I was in what we call soft news. By the time I retired, I started to see political points of view work their way into basic news reporting, especially on cable news networks. The Bill of Rights established freedom of the press so we would be independent. It's sad when the press isn't completely independent. It's fine to have an opinion, but for what's supposed to be straight news, make it straight news. Tell us about your new book, Little Secrets. It's a memoir about being adopted and the journey I went on to find my birth parents after learning about this when I was an adult. What happens in this book is we learn something about all of the adults involved in making the decision to bring a child to full term, giving them up for adoption, and choosing to adopt a child. This spring, I got tired of hearing all the talk about abortion. No one in the news ever talked about adoption. That's when I got this out of the fireproof file, which had been sitting there since I retired in 2013. And I added an epilogue about adoption as an option. My book is for people who are faced with making that decision. I want people to think about it. Helping Brycey. Community comes together to give recovering addict new life. When Brycey Tamayo was 12 years old, she started taking ADHD meds because a friend told her it would make her smart. By the time she was 14, she was smoking marijuana. It wasn't long after that when she became addicted to methamphetamines and was skipping school. In the mornings, she rode the bus to school in her small hometown of Martin Valley in Eastland County, about an hour east of Abilene. However, she wouldn't go inside the school building. Instead, she would go somewhere nearby, take drugs, and then ride the school bus back home at the end of the day. At the age of 15, she was pregnant, not sure of who the father was. Quote, "When I discovered that I was pregnant, I stopped the drugs and alcohol briefly, but as soon as my son was born, I went right back to the abuse," end quote, Tamayo said. Quote, "However, that wasn't the low point of my life," end quote. By the time she was 20, Tamayo was homeless, had lost custody of her son, and was arrested for second-degree felony. Quote, "I had several opportunities to get my life back on the right track, but I guess I didn't want to be helped at the time," end quote, Tamayo said. Quote, "I was in two psychiatric hospitals, one in Fort Worth and one in Wichita Falls. There was also a nice lady named Sylvia Silva, who owned a real estate company in Fort Worth. I'm not sure what she saw in me. She took me to her home and wanted to help me, but I panicked and left. I was homeless once again, and I hung out with a guy named Squiggy on the streets of Fort Worth. At one point, I was living in an abandoned house and dealing drugs," end quote. Tamayo was in an abusive relationship with a man whose job required that he drive back and forth between Fort Worth and Midland, and she would ride with him. One evening, the man abandoned Tamayo at Moss Creek Lake near Big Spring. She wandered barefoot in an alcohol-induced haze the entire night. Quote, "I was so thirsty during the night, and I drank water out of some type of tank that smelled like cow manure," end quote, she recalled. Quote, "Finally, the next morning, I saw a family who was camping near the lake. As I look back on it, I think God put that family in that particular place for a reason. It was the beginning of a chain of events that would change my life forever. They called 911, and I was transported in an ambulance to the hospital in Big Spring, where I was treated for dehydration and whatever was in the water I drank. Then the same family took me to Midland and paid for me to stay in the Days Inn Motel on Front Street for 3 nights," end quote. Quote, "I temporarily had a roof over my head, but I was desperate to find some money to buy beer," end quote, she said. Quote, "I started walking up and down Wall Street in hopes of panhandling some money. I passed Mitchell Furniture Store a couple of times. I didn't realize it, but Mark Mitchell, the owner, was watching me. During my third time passing by the store, I decided to go in and ask for money. Mark and several other employees immediately surrounded me. Not in a threatening way, but it was more like they cared about me. As it turned out, the employees were all graduates of Teen Challenge. Mark told me that I could get help at Teen Challenge, and he would sponsor me to go through the program. Quote, I refused his help and left the store. That night, I took up once again with the same abusive guy that had abandoned me in Big Spring. It was a terrible night. He dragged me through the parking lot of the West Wind Motel. For 3 days, we traveled from city to city, going through one series of bad events after another, until I decided I was done and ready to go. Quote, I remembered Mark Mitchell, and so I went back to the store in Midland. Mark then took me to Teen Challenge. 16 days later, I gave my life to Christ and have now been clean and sober for 5 years," end quote. Teen Challenge is a residential, nonprofit, faith-based organization based in Midland that assists men and women ages 18 and older with alcohol and drug abuse. Tamayo not only restored her sobriety at Teen Challenge and discovered her faith, but also received her high school equivalency diploma, GED. she celebrated her 21st birthday when she was a resident at Teen Challenge. Another Midland-based organization, Fair Havens, helped Tamayo gain custody of her son and helped her enroll at Midland College, where she earned an Associate of Science degree in Criminal Justice and discovered her talents in creative writing. Through her writing classes, she attended the Sigma Tau Delta National English Honors Convention during the past 3 years. At the April 2024 convention in St. Louis, Missouri, she won second place out of over 100 entries for her piece, quote, "How Did I Get Here?" End quote, an autobiographical short story about her time when she was homeless in Fort Worth. Quote, "I loved having Brycey in my creative writing class," end quote, Stacy Egan, Midland College English professor, said. Quote, "Her enthusiasm for fiction writing and the supportive feedback she gave her peers made the class such a close-knit community and a joy to teach. I have traveled with Brycey to conventions in Atlanta, Denver, and St. Louis, and watched her share autobiographical work that has inspired so many people. I am thankful to organizations that work to make sure students like Brycey arrive at Midland College, where they can be nurtured by opportunities and support that enable them to thrive. One thing that will always stand out to me about Brycey's story is that her journey here started with an individual in our community taking the time to help. I think of Midland College as a village that helps students, but this would never be possible without the Midland community that supports us." Quote, "Brycey will undoubtedly change the world, and her story proves that when others believe in you, you begin to believe in yourself. That belief is like a domino effect towards achieving great things," end quote. Tamayo also took a music class from Midland College music professor Katie Osumke. Currently, she and her best friend Channing have formed a duet called The Prodigal Daughters and have written a country gospel song entitled, quote, "We've Come Home," end quote. Quote, "Midland College opened my eyes as to what my future could be," end quote, Tamayo said. Quote, "Currently, I'm working as the Women's Workforce Coordinator at Teen Challenge because I want to give back to the organization that changed my life and taught me how to follow Christ. Eventually, I'd like to go into law enforcement or probation services. I've recently applied for positions with the Midland Police Department and Crime Scene Investigation. I can't wait to see what the future holds," end quote. Amy Post McCorkle, Midland College Speech Communication Professor and Department Chair, fondly remembers Tamayo in her class. Quote, "When I think of Brycey, I think of the Aristotle quote, 'We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit,'" end quote. Tamayo definitely believes in making a healthy lifestyle a habit. She enjoys CrossFit and exercises regularly at Renewed Strength CrossFit in Midland. She is currently working toward becoming a certified personal trainer and nutrition coach. Quote, "Like a lot of addicts who become clean, I started gaining weight," end quote, Tamayo explained. Quote, "In fact, weight gain is a major reason why some women relapse. Fortunately, my faith in Christ was strong, and he gave me the strength to find a healthy alternative through exercise," end quote. 2 years ago, Tamayo married her husband, Christian, and their blended family consists of her son, Jace, who is now 10, and Christian's six-year-old daughter, Ximena. The family enjoys barbecuing and camping together. Brycey and Christian are also active in a couples group at their church, where Brycey says she has made another best friend for life, Tish. While life continues to have struggles for Tamayo, like when her mother passed away in 2020 and when she recently lost a good friend, Chastity, to fentanyl overdose, she has learned to take one day at a time. Quote, "Once you meet Brycey, you will never forget her," end quote, Post McCorkle said. Quote, "When she was in my class, she always strove for excellence. She has a vivaciously energetic spirit, and to know her is to love her," end quote. Life Tributes. Eugene Ray Monroe. 2/15/1933 to 7/29/2024. Eugene Ray Monroe, 91, of Scottsdale, Arizona, and formerly of Midland, Texas, passed away on July 29, 2024, at his Scottsdale home. He was preceded in death by his wife of 60 years, Kathleen Kathy Monroe, who died on June 19, 2023. Gene, as he was known by all, was born on February 15, 1933, in Meade, Kansas, the youngest of three children of Robert R.T. and Layla Jones Monroe. His brother, Donald and Sister Gladys Monroe Moss also preceded him in death. He is survived by his niece, Aletta Rhodes of Bowie, Texas, along with several nieces and nephews. He wishes to thank his niece, good friends, and the caregivers of Cypress Home Care for their loving, patient care during this last year. Herbert Blankenship, 7/26/1927 to 8/2/2024. On August 2, 2024, Herbert Blankenship, age 97, filed his final flight plan, taxied down life's runway, and lifted off to heaven. With his resurrection faith, we are assured he has been reunited with his cherished wife, Elizabeth, and son, Gary Don. Herbert Blankenship was born in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, to Nettie and Herman Blankenship. He was the oldest of five children. Herbert is survived by his daughter, Barbara Graffa, and her husband, Trey, whom Herb loved like a son. He is also survived by his two granddaughters, Tiffany Mead and her husband, Todd, Courtney Kerr and her husband, Andy. Five great-grandchildren, Gunner and Logan Mead of Midland, and Addison, Carter, and Cooper Kerr of Fort Worth. His youngest sister, Sarah Ann Young, survives him as well. He is preceded in death by his wife, Elizabeth, son, Gary Don, brothers, Norman Blankenship and Wendell Blankenship, and his sister, Virginia Pownell. We invite family and friends to join us in sending him off at 2 o'clock p.m. Saturday, August 17, 2024, at First United Glass Chapel. A reception will follow in the church atrium. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. David Jeffrey Brashear, 3/13/1951 to 7/19/2024. David Jeffrey Brashear, 73, of Midland, Texas, began his heavenly journey on Friday, July 19, 2024. David, known to his family and friends as Jeff, was born on March 13, 1951 in Beeville, Texas, to Homer and Patricia Brashear. Jeff is survived by his wife of 51 years, Patricia Alcott Brashear, and sons Ryan Jeffrey Brashear of Norman, Oklahoma, and Kelly Patrick Brashear of Midland, Texas. Memorial donations may be made to Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals, 4200 North Fairgrounds Road, Midland, Texas, 79705, or to your favorite charity. Interment will be with his parents Homer Otis Brashear and Patricia Ida Smith Brashear, in the family cemetery in Mineral, Texas, at a later date. Arrangements were made under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jody Strickland, 10/8/1951 to 7/29/2024. Jody Strickland passed away at home on July 29, 2024, in Waxahachie, Texas, with his daughters by his side. He was 72 years old. Jody was born in Midland. On October 8, 1951. Jody is survived by his daughters Jennifer, Sean, Kane, and Tracy, Colin, Gary, and son Scott Strickland. He was papa to Jordan and Joshua Kane, Michael, Gary, Violet, Kaylee, and Eli Strickland, brother to Jaker Strickland. He is preceded in death by Father Ben F. Strickland and Mother Anna Jean Dimmick. He will be missed tremendously. Joe Seal Schulze, 9/6/1939 to 8/3/2024. Joe Seal D. Schulze Doyle, affectionately known as Joe, passed away at the age of 84 in Chama, New Mexico. She leaves behind a loving family, her husband Wilfred Ray Schulze, her brother Terry Schulze, her son Douglas Schulze and wife Dolores, her daughter Amy Ulstad and husband Brian, her grandchildren Dalton Schulze and Kimberly Butler, and her great-granddaughters Ava and Renly Schulze. Joe was preceded in death by her parents, Greenleaf and Ethel Doyle, and her brothers Bobby and Gail Schulze. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, August 16th at Heartland Funeral Home in Early. Funeral services for Joe will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, August 17th in the Heartland Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Bangs Cemetery. James Newcomet, 8/22/1960 to 7/28/2024, Oklahoma City. James Walter Newcomet was born in Oklahoma City on August 22, 1960. He died July 28, 2024. He is the son of Frank and Geneva Newcomet, both deceased. A brother, Joseph Newcomet, died in 1972. He is survived by two sisters, Mary Catherine Katie Dobie of Midland, Texas, Jana Chase Clint of Kansas City, Missouri, and one brother, Wayne Newcomet Linda of Midland, Texas, as well as nieces and nephews. Sandra Ginger Elwood. Sandra Ginger Elwood passed away on August 1st, 2024. Memorial services will be held Friday, August 16th, 2024 at 10 o'clock a.m. at First Methodist Church. Arrangements have been entrusted to Ellis Funeral Home. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Robert Sanchez. Robert Sanchez, 43, passed away on Monday, August 5th, 2024. A family gathering will take place on Monday, August 12th, 2024 from 6 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Memorial Mass is set for Tuesday, August 13th, 2024 at 10 o'clock a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Arrangements have been entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Thomas Guffey Midkiff. Thomas Guffey Midkiff, age 81, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, August 7, 2024. A memorial mass is scheduled for Tuesday, August 13, 2024 at 2 o'clock p.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial will be held privately. Arrangements have been entrusted to Ellis Funeral Home. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Gary Burnett Parson. Gary Burnett Parson, age 68, of Midland, Texas, went to be with the Lord Thursday, August 1, 2024. A visitation will be held Friday, August 9, 2024 at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas, 79701, from 4 o'clock p.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.